move now to our speakers, and we're very fortunate today to actually have both of these gentlemen with us. They have both got a great deal of experience in helping farm families in bankruptcy workouts, and so I'm very gratified that they were able to join us. They're planning somewhat of a tag team approach for today's program, so I'm going to introduce both of them up front here and let them kind of take it from there. I'd like to start with Norm Dahlstead, who is a professor and farm management specialist at Colorado State University. His primary area of research include costs of production related to crops, vegetable, fruit, and livestock throughout the state of Colorado. Norm also does a great deal of work with crop insurance across the state and in programs with Kansas, Nebraska, Wyoming, and several other states. Two other major areas of interest cover estate planning and financial analysis in the context of bankruptcy, particularly Chapter 11 and Chapter 12 reorganizations. Norm has worked extensively with farm families across Colorado and around the region to develop the necessary documentation to complete the bankruptcy process. I have known Norm for over two decades and can attest to the fact that he is without a doubt one of the country's experts when it comes to agricultural bankruptcy. Further, Norm has many ties to production agriculture. In fact, he spends many weeks each harvest season in the cab of a combine as part of a custom harvest crew. He truly understands the issues faced by today's farm families. I'll move now to introduce Ken. Ken and Norm, as I understand it, basically work somewhat as a tag team when they're offering farm family bankruptcy programs when they present. So today's program will not be unusual for them. Ken is a practicing attorney located in Fort Collins, Colorado, with Ken Koppel and Associates. He represents ranchers, dairies, family farms in all areas of agricultural law, including water disputes, agribusiness litigation, and bankruptcy reorganization. Ken has been representing clients in Chapter 11 and 12 bankruptcies for more than 20 years. He is also a frequent guest lecturer at Colorado State University in the areas of agricultural law and has in the past taught classes in water law and agricultural law at CSU. More information is available on both of these speakers at our Ag and Uncertain Times website. The presentation they prepared for today's webinar is entitled, Is Bankruptcy a Viable Option for Financially Distressed Agricultural Producers? So without further delay, I'll turn it to them to get started. I believe Ken plans to lead off. And let me say again, thank you both for your willingness to join us today in this presentation.
Okay, thank you. My name is Ken Koppel, and I'm going to talk about agricultural bankruptcy and some related issues this morning. Agricultural bankruptcy is designed to help family farms, dairies, ranches, all types of production agriculture to restructure their debts so that they can continue with their operation. Agricultural bankruptcy can fall under either Chapter 11 or Chapter 12. Chapter 12 is a chapter that is designed specifically for agriculture. Chapter 11 is not designed specifically for agriculture. It, you know, Frontier Airlines has filed Chapter 11. We've heard about GM has filed Chapter 11. Sometimes it is used in farm and ranch operations, but Chapter 12 is the preferred chapter for farm and ranch situations. So the most of what I'll be talking about this morning will be related to the Chapter 12. Let's start out. I'd like to talk about several things that trigger a bankruptcy filing. Probably the most common trigger is either a foreclosure or a replevin action. A foreclosure is where a lender seeks to take back the real estate. So if you have a loan with Farm Credit and they foreclose on your farm, they're seeking to take back your real estate. They're not seeking to take back your cattle or your tractors or your equipment. The legal action that seeks to take back your cattle and equipment is called a replevin action. Some people refer to that as repossession. The legal term is replevin. The replevin action is a much quicker legal proceeding. The bank can file the replevin action today, and they may have a court hearing 10 days from now. Whereas the foreclosure action is a slower proceeding. You have more time in the event of the foreclosure. So these are two things that we, over the years, that I have seen that trigger people to come in and want to know about Chapter 12. You're served with legal papers. You know, it's obviously a very stressful time for the family farmer, and they don't know what to do, so they come and see an agricultural attorney. The only problem with that is that we often don't have a lot of time under those circumstances to take action. There's some deadlines in the foreclosures and replevins. So I think it is wise for producers to look at the Chapter 12 before you get to that point. Now, just because a foreclosure or a replevin is filed, that doesn't mean that you can't then file Chapter 12. But you're going to be in a time crunch if you wait that long. So let's look and see at what some of the other chapters are on the introduction page that are available under the code, just to go over the chapters. Chapter 7 is the liquidation chapter. There's no reorganization plan in Chapter 7. All you're doing is liquidating your assets. So in a farm situation, you're going to sell your land. You're going to usually auction the equipment and the cattle. In the Chapter 7, when the proceeding is done, all that you have left are usually things like your household furnishings and things that are exempt under the bankruptcy law. In Chapter 7, you don't continue with your farming business. Chapter 11, I spoke about a little bit. It's a reorganization. It's a broad chapter. It's designed for corporations and individuals all the way from Frontier Airlines down to a mom-and-pop grocery store. As long as you're trying to reorganize some sort of a business, you're going to be eligible for Chapter 11. Chapter 12, obviously, is the chapter we're going to focus on, and that's the agricultural chapter. Chapter 13 is a reorganization for a wage earner. This would be someone, for example, that works at a job and gets a paycheck every 2 weeks or every month, and they want to, usually it involves a situation where they want to retain their house, they want to restructure the loans on their house. Very rarely is Chapter 13 applicable to a farm or ranch situation. Let's see what's on the next. Yeah, Chapter 12 is designed for the family farmers and ranchers. This can include dairies. This can include feedlots. This can include all types of farming and ranching. There are eligibility requirements to be in Chapter 12. Probably the most common eligibility issue is the total debt. The total debt must not exceed $3.237 million. I've met recently with some clients and potential clients, and they're significantly over that debt limit. If you're over that limit, then your option is Chapter 11, but you're not going to be eligible for Chapter 12. The other eligibility requirements don't come up as often. They are examined at the time that you file, and this is something that the agricultural lawyer or the consultant or the farm and ranch manager needs to look into when discussing this with farm and ranch families are these eligibility requirements. There are different requirements for the individual and the corporation. The debt limit is the same, but with the corporation, 80% of the assets, the value of assets, must be related to the agricultural business. So we do have these eligibility requirements, and that's a threshold issue that must be examined before you go any further in your discussion of the bankruptcy. Now, just because you're not eligible for Chapter 12, that does not mean that you're out of luck. You can still file Chapter 11. Again, Chapter 12 is preferred and works better as a general rule for farm and ranch families. Well, let's see. Other eligibility issues, which would be on the next screen, I believe, are prior bankruptcies and credit counseling. If you have a prior bankruptcy, you need to inform your attorney of that, or your farm and ranch management person, so they can see if that is going to cause a problem with filing a new bankruptcy. Also, all debtors and borrowers must do credit counseling within 180 days before filing a case. That can be done online, and it's really a kind of a formality, but it is something that needs to be done. So let's also talk about other issues that we want to look at, and let me talk first about a little bit about the time frame on Chapter 12. Because Chapter 12, for a legal proceeding, it is a fairly quick-moving process. If you file a Chapter 12 case today, your plan of reorganization will come due in 90 days. During that 90 days, you're going to have several meetings with the creditors, with your trustee, and with your attorney, and so there's going to be a lot happening in that 90-day period. So you have a fairly short time to prepare your reorganization plan. Approximately 40 days after you file your plan, you're going to have your initial hearing with the judge to determine what objections have been filed to your plan. And then sometime after that, and this time frame is kind of an approximation, but say 160 to 180 days after you file, you're going to have your final confirmation hearing, which is, you would think of that like a trial with a judge. There's no jury, but you testify before the judge on your Chapter 12 plan proceeding. So because of these time frames, and because the 90 days goes by pretty quick, there are things that we need to look at before filing. These are things that Norm and I look at in these cases before we even file the case, and these are things that farm and ranch managers and producers themselves can look at and think about before deciding to file the Chapter 12. So I'm going to go through some things. I don't think these things are not going to be on the screen, but these are important factors that we need to look at. One would be what loans would you be restructuring? Would you restructure the loan on your real estate? Would you restructure the loan on your equipment? Are you current on any of your loans? Because if you're current on loans, you can just stay current and not restructure those loans in the Chapter 12 case. Another issue is cash flow. Will your farm cash flow after you reorganize? This is very important because oftentimes creditors bring up this issue as an objection to confirmation. In other words, the bank will say, "Judge, we just don't think this will work. We don't think it'll cash flow because the producer is not using realistic numbers. So if for example, you're an alfalfa producer and your cash flow, you're showing that you're gonna sell alfalfa for $300 a ton, you're not gonna get away with that. So you have to use realistic numbers, and those realistic numbers have to show that it will cash flow. By cash flow, we mean you'll be able to make your new payments to the lenders, you'll be able to make payments to your suppliers and the co-op and those types of creditors, and you'll be able to continue on with your operation for a period of at least 3 years. We need a 3-year cash flow, and that's what Norm Dahlstedt does in these cases, is prepare these cash flow documents. So that's a very important consideration, and you can look at that before you file the case. You may not have a precise cash flow as far as knowing how everything is going to turn out, but if you meet with your attorney and your farm consultant, you can kind of rough out a cash flow and you have a pretty good idea going in whether or not it's going to work financially. I would say that is one of the two biggest issues that we need to examine prior to filing the case. The second of the big issues is operating credit. We see an awful lot of producers that are interested in Chapter 12, but they do not have operating credit. And this can be a problem. If you don't have operating credit and you file Chapter 12, you're not going to be getting into the case very long before the judge or the trustee is going to raise this issue. How are you going to operate if you don't have an operating loan? So that can be a problem. Some producers have operating loans that they've got lined up before they file the Chapter 12. Some producers have cash flow that is not encumbered by any of their liens, for example, a farm operation that does a lot of custom work, that custom work income is generally not encumbered by any bank lien, so you can operate off your custom work. The dairies, they have cash flow with their milk income. The milk income generally is encumbered with liens, but we can, in those cases, go to the judge and ask the judge to let us use a portion of that milk income to maintain the cattle and continue the operations at least for the 90-day period of time so that we can determine if we can reorganize. So the cash flow and the operating funds, I think those are the two things that need to be focused on before we file the case, as well as eligibility. So let's see here what we have on the next sheet that's on the screen now. Economic feasibility. Norm, do you want to address that?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and address that, Ken. Obviously, the first point is that we need to address, and that Ken has kind of mentioned this briefly, is that is there a possibility that the reorganization is a feasible way to pursue the future with? And of course, he's addressed the payments. One thing I think that's important for producers to realize is that an appraisal will be necessary, and based on the appraised value of the assets, that's the amount that the loans will be re-amortized, etc., based on the appraised value. So in the case, for example, of one dairy that I recently worked with, they had nearly $900,000 in debt, but the appraised value of the assets were $300,000. So basically the $300,000 is what they're going to repay. So it did give them a fair amount of latitude in terms of their payments. Of course, the amount that they're short in terms of the appraised value then goes into what's called the unsecured because you're going to have both secured creditors and unsecured creditors. And then Ken will talk about liquidation analysis later on here when he gets into the tax consequences as well. Obviously, one thing that I try to point out to producers is that what you've done in the past, if that's not working, proposing the same plan for the future is probably not going to be accepted by either the bankruptcy judge or the creditors. So we need to look at, and this is where a farm management specialist or a business analysis would serve a very viable role in determining what can we do that could better our operation. And one of the key things that Ken and I have found is by working with them in terms of their marketing, improving their marketing skills. Sometimes just a simple forward contracting of commodities so the judge can see that there's going to be guaranteed income from whatever products you're producing on your farm or ranch. That certainly will assist in making the decision. So that aspect's important, irregardless of what you think the markets are going to do, whatever. It also enhances your cash flow ability, etc. The other thing is to look at crop insurance as collateral in terms of meeting your future needs, certainly carrying adequate crop insurance on those insurable crops and range grounds and pasture grounds, etc. Also our way of handling that. Agricultural options, puts or calls, also will provide some reasonable reduction in risk in terms of uncertainty related to prices in the future. So those things are, those minor things, even though they seem minor, are fairly important, particularly when we get into cash collateral, as Ken pointed out, that one of the key problems that I have seen in recent years is the ability of the operations to cash flow. Because in case of a cow-calf operation, we have income once or twice a year, so we need to have monies to cover our operating costs and our family living, which is also a very important aspect during those periods of time where we have very little income or not income at all. So we need to make sure that we have some cash surpluses to cover that, and that gets to be a very difficult hurdle to overcome in some cases. In those cases, unless we can find a secondary lender or an outside lender to provide us with cash, our operating costs, we're going to be in difficulty. In some cases, family members will offer to help, but nevertheless, we have to make sure that they are repaid as well. One other thing that I think is important is that you, and this has been an issue I think in most states, is to find a qualified agribusiness consultant, a farm management specialist or whatever, to work with individual farms and ranches to go through this process. Ken and I have been doing this for Chapter 12 since 1986, I believe, so we're getting close to 25 years, so needless to say we've had a fair amount of experience. But finding someone locally to prepare the plan that can be qualified as an expert in the federal bankruptcy court is incredibly important, in my opinion. You need to bring someone with credibility related to market prices, etc. And along those lines, one other thing that I recommend that business consultants do is that they actually develop, and for those of us that have had training in farm management in our lifetime, develop a crop and livestock plan over the life of the reorganization plan. So you would identify the crops, the yields, the expected prices, and obviously the revenue that's going to be associated with that, and you need to document that. You can do that by looking at historical information related to that particular crop on that farm. If that information is not available, certainly you would have average yields, prices by county through the National Agricultural Statistical Service or through your local Department of Ag in each state, or possibly through your land-grant institution. Certainly they will have enterprise budgets that you can use as a foundation to develop that. You would do the same thing with the livestock. Basically, how many cows you're going to have or how many ewes you're going to have or hogs, etc. And what is the livestock plan in terms of production and prices replacement rates, retention rates, and so on in terms of females. All that kind of information is, in my opinion, is extremely important in terms of providing that kind of information to the bankruptcy court and or the creditors as well. And that should be done for at least 3 years. Most Chapter 12s that I have been involved in have usually had a three-year time frame to them. There are a few cases where you may have, because of the debt servicing and maybe the amount of unsecured credit that lies out there, that you may have to do a five-year plan. But in most cases, 3 years will cover that quite adequately. Just some other little minor points. One thing that I think is probably as incredibly important as anything is to find a good bankruptcy attorney. Ken, in my opinion, is the best in the state of Colorado. And he has an extensive agricultural background, having grown up and raised on a farm in Nebraska. And currently his son and he are currently running a irrigated corn operation and cattle operation in western Nebraska. So Ken is much in tune with the various agricultural entities that we have to deal with on a daily basis in Colorado and of course Nebraska and Wyoming. So that's important. Ken is an excellent arbitrator and mediation in terms of trying to get things resolved before we end up in a full-blown trial, trying to get our plan approved. I think if all the details can be worked out and the creditors can be reasonably assured that this plan is going to work, then in those cases, I think that the success rate is extremely high. So having a good bankruptcy attorney in your area, if there's one available, by all means, you need to work with that individual. And I think there are attorneys out there that specialize in bankruptcy and financial mediation, and those are the types of individuals you need to try and identify in your region. So that's a really key point that I wanted to make with you. The other thing is, within your bankruptcy plan, sometimes people don't realize this, but you're going to have to pay trustee fees. So if, like Ken was mentioning, if you have notes that are current and you've made the payments on it, you're not going to pay trustee fees on those. But the notes that are restructured, re-amortized, etc., in Colorado currently the trustee is getting 5%. Now the payments are made directly from the farm to the trustee. Okay, the trustee is not involved in the day-to-day operation. Like you might see in a Chapter 11, where the federal bankruptcy trustee is involved in a more direct way in a Chapter 11. In a Chapter 12, basically he becomes the clearinghouse. All the payments are made to him, along with whatever the fee is. Currently, I believe it's 5%, or at least the last few bankruptcies I've worked on, the fee has been 5%. And then he will distribute the funds, certainly to the secured creditors, as well as those that are in the unsecured pile, okay? The other thing is that a bankruptcy is going to cost you some money, so you need to make sure that you have some adequate funds to retain a bankruptcy attorney, okay? And you may have to account for paying off those legal fees in your reorganization plan as well. One thing that I've found that some families try to do, and it doesn't work very well in my opinion, is that we need to be aside from being realistic with our revenues, we certainly don't, as Ken was mentioning, we don't want to overstate those, and we certainly don't want to understate expenses, particularly when we're looking at a farming operation, such things as repair bills, fuel, insurance, and other related costs. We need to be realistic. And we also need to factor in many cases, what I do is try to factor in some nominal increase on an annual basis. For example, we know that diesel fuel today is in the farm fuel is in that low $2 range. Who knows, in 2 to 3 years it could be as high as $4.50 again, as we observed in the summer of 08. So we need to make some allowance for some sort of contingencies to make sure our cash flow is going to work. We certainly aren't going to probably see a dollar farm fuel again or extremely cheap fertilizer, for example, which is another big expense in seed, etc. So we need to make a realistic cash flow. The point I wanted to make too, though, is family living. In too many cases, it's been my experience that families tend to underestimate their family living. And for a family of four in the state of Colorado, certainly expenses for family living are quite high, and probably higher than people would want to admit to. But typically, $2,500 to $3,000 a month is something reasonable to put in your cash flow for family living. Because in many cases, you're not making a house payment because that's part of your farm real estate debt. Possibly some of your insurance, your gasoline that you burn in your personal vehicle, etc., may also be included in your fuel costs and or your insurance payments. So the one thing that I've noticed that is extremely high, and most people are already aware of this, and certainly Congress and our current president are addressing this, is the high cost of insurance, health insurance in particular. And that's something families need to look at, particularly if they have young children. They're probably paying a substantial amount on a monthly basis to cover their health needs. So those are some of the key things that I wanted to point out. And I'm going to turn it over to Ken, because I think he has a few other things that he wants to visit with the audience with. Ken?
All right, Norm. First thing I'd like to, or the next thing I would like to address is, how is a loan restructured in a Chapter 12? And this is a frequent question that that we're asked when we meet initially with producers. So let's talk about, how is a loan restructured? How does that work in the Chapter 12? And I'm just going to say hypothetically that we have a $500,000 real estate loan. And that's the balance that is due on the loan on the day we file the case. So the bank is owed $500,000. That includes interest and bank fees and the principal and then just the whole ball of wax. And let's say that in this hypothetical that we have a recent appraisal that shows that this farm is only worth $400,000. So that what we do in the Chapter 12 plan is we take the $400,000 and we restructure that into a new loan, a new real estate loan. And the loan can be restructured based upon current market terms. So if it's fairly common for a real estate loan to be restructured over 20 years, then we can do that. We can restructure it over 20 years at a current market interest rate and make payments once or twice a year. So that's how we take care of that $400,000. Now remember, the loan balance was $500,000. So we have $100,000 left over. That $100,000 does not disappear, but it is moved from secured to unsecured. That means that we take that $100,000 and we put it into a pool. We call it a pool of unsecured debt. So that $100,000 would go into that pool. If there are debts owed to unsecured creditors, like let's say you have a fuel bill, let's say you have some credit card bills, let's say the producer owes money to the local co-op for fertilizer and seed, all of those unsecured debts go into this pool, and we do a what's called a liquidation analysis, and it's just we look at what would happen if the producer was liquidated under Chapter 7 on the day of the confirmation hearing or during the Chapter 12. In other words, if you had to line everything up and sell that you owned, all your land and cattle and equipment, how much would be left over after the secured notes were paid off? And then we use that as a guideline, and in the Chapter 12, we have to pay at least that much, usually a little more. So it varies a lot from case to case. Most Chapter 12 cases, the unsecured pool creditors do not receive 100 cents on the dollar. In some cases, they receive perhaps 10 cents on the dollar or 50 cents on the dollar. I have had cases where it was 100 cents on the dollar, but it varies from case to case. So that's that's the mechanism that that we use and that the judge uses in working out these loans. So if you have a situation where your loans are undersecured, then that's, you know, it's going to be bifurcated in this fashion. Now, if you have a loan where you owe the bank $500,000, and the appraiser comes in and he says, "Judge, this land is worth $600,000," then you're not going to be able to bifurcate the loan. You're not going to be able to make that division. You're going to have to just repay. You can restructure the amount that you owe, but you're not going to have any type of a write-down at all. Also, in that situation, you're going to have to pay interest and reasonable expenses, including attorney fees, that the bank incurs. If you are undersecured on this loan, like in my initial example where the $500,000 loan had collateral that was worth $400,000 based on the appraisal, in that situation, you normally are not going to have to pay interest after the day you file the case, nor are you going to have to pay legal expenses for the bank, or costs or other expenses. Sometimes the bank will have another appraisal done and they will try to charge the producer for that appraiser, things like that. So that's how we restructure these secured loans. The unsecured loans and the trade credit, that all goes into this pool, which is lumped together and treated in a separate class. Now, one thing that I would like to point out is the tax considerations. Because this is really another thing that the farm and ranch managers, the attorneys, anyone advising the producer should take into consideration before the case is filed, and that is, would there be a tax advantage to filing the Chapter 12 case? And where this comes up is in regard to the sale of assets, because oftentimes the Chapter 12 case will involve a sale of some of the assets in order to reduce the debt load. So say, for example, that you have a farmer that has 1,000 acres of land, and that he decides he's going to sell 300 acres. He's got an offer to sell 300 out of that 1,000, and he decides he's going to sell that 300 acres. He's going to use that money to pay down his debt load, and he thinks that that will streamline and make more efficient his operation. If he makes that transaction during the Chapter 12 as opposed to prior to the Chapter 12, there may be significant tax advantages with regard to the capital gains tax on the transaction. That's because the capital gains tax can be classified as an unsecured debt, and it can be shuffled into this pool. So you may have an $80,000 capital gains tax on that transaction. If the tax debt is moved into this unsecured category, that capital gains tax may be cut down significantly. So this can be a big dollar item in cases where the producer is thinking about selling assets or some of the assets at the time of the Chapter 12. So I would say that's another, along with the cash flow. I think I said earlier that the cash flow issue and the operating funds and the eligibility were three big items that we need to look at. But I would add this tax issue would be the fourth big issue that we need to examine before we file the case, and it certainly needs to be addressed and looked at early on in the discussions with the producer.
Okay.
So I don't think we have anything further, and so Norm, do you have anything else that you want to add?
I think I'll just add a couple of comments. One is, again, I think if you have a good attorney, agriculture attorney, who has some experience in the area of bankruptcy, he can make the process quite tenable for you, because he can resolve a lot of the conflicts, and in many cases, the final hearing could be just a formality, because he's resolved all the objections. As Ken had mentioned earlier, that you may get objections to the plan. We need to resolve those, and certainly, as a debtor filing a Chapter 12, I need to work with the creditors, possibly to liquidate assets or restructure my business, etc., so that everyone is in agreement. And that's very important, I think, to have an attorney that can do that type of thing. So I think we've covered pretty much everything that Ken and I wanted to say. Granted, we've kind of stuffed everything in to about a 45 or 50-minute presentation. There's probably some nuances we've overlooked, but hopefully those will be brought up in terms of the questions that maybe the audience may have for us individually. So John, we'll turn it over to you to see if we have any questions from the audience.